Hello, welcome back to Marker's Eye on the Liga podcast. 2017 kicks off with a bang, and we are back from the winter break and re-energized and raring to go. I'm Ollie Wilson, your host, as always. Today on the show, I'm joined by two of the finest minds that Marker has to offer, Mr. Ewan McTare. Ewan, pleasure to have you back on board, mate. How was the Christmas break? I hope you got some sort of break.
Yeah, it was good. I wasn't quite as grinchy as you predicted last time I was on. It was turned out a little bit nicer, so no, it was good.
You actually managed to stifle a smile over the Christmas period. I'm glad to hear.
A half smile.
A half smile, yeah.
I got some nice socks, so a half smile.
Well, glad to hear it, mate. Glad you're ready and raring to go. As well on the show today, Mark Mayo joining us. Mark, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Had a decent little Christmas. Actually went on the podcast with Ian Wright on the Sun a couple of weeks ago, so I'm doing a bit of a Lionel Messi at the moment and waiting until my Marker salary gets upped before I really commit myself beyond the end of the season.
Oh, wow. So we won't be getting you back on next week then, that's for sure. I'm sorry as well that we don't have any guests like Ian Wright on our show today. I do apologise. You must feel like you're slumming it a bit now to start 2017.
Yeah, well, I was hoping we're going to be live from Zurich today, but then you called me this morning and said you didn't want to go, so... Typical, really, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's budget cuts, mate. We're all struggling through in this time at the moment. Pleasure to have you on board, mate, that's for sure. Let's get into everything, because it's been a crazy start to 2017 already. We're going to be talking a little bit of Barcelona to kick off the show. We'll have a look at Sevilla as well and their quick turnaround from their Copa del Rey first leg defeat to Real Madrid. Real Madrid record-breaking, or at least record-equaling for the moment to start the season. We'll look at the UEFA Euro All 11 as well, dominated by La Liga players, as always, in a bit on the battle of the bottom four. But let's start things off with Barcelona, because they finished 2016 so well, firing goals on all cylinders in all competitions. The 7-0 victory over Hercules, although a third division side, it's a great way to just cap off the 2016 with that 7-0 victory. They come back, they take on Bilbao in the first leg of the Copa del Rey round of 16, and boom, they end up losing 2-1. Pique starts blaming refereeing decisions, saying there's that Madrid bias once again. And then they go to Villarreal, who've been exceptional at the start of this season, and end up struggling again. And while all that's going on, we get two names cropping up as rumoured replacements for Luis Enrique come the end of this season, in Ernesto Valverde, of course, the Bilbao coach, and Jorge Sampaoli of Sevilla. Ewan, let's start with you. The fact that names are now coming out about Luis Enrique shows that his position is becoming a very short-lived one indeed at the moment, in terms of the time remaining at Barcelona, do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, the results haven't been going that well. I mean, that's been obvious, and you have to wonder whether Barcelona would really be that keen for him to stay, which sounds incredible considering he won 6 trophies, you know, just a couple of seasons ago. But, you know, everyone has short memories. But then he's also been very quiet on the subject. He doesn't seem to have committed his future, so it might be that he wants to walk away and that they could come to a sort of happy parting of the ways at the end of the season. So, yeah, the names you mentioned, there's a very good chance that one of them could be in the Camp Nou dugout next season. That's, at this point, I'd probably guess that he won't be there come the first game in August.
They're not really, either Valverde or Sampaoli, though, Barca-type managers, if you will, from what we've had with Pep Guardiola, Tito Villanova as well, and, of course, Luis Enrique. It would be a big change, wouldn't it, Mark, for either Valverde or Sampaoli to come in?
Yeah, Sampaoli's style of play has always suited the kind of smaller teams, as it were, the sort of four out of five star teams, Chile and Sevilla being two very good examples of when he can take a team and think, well, we're not the type of team that's going to say we are the best full stop, but we can kind of build up some momentum, a bit of siege mentality, and that's worked for them. Whereas if you go to Barcelona, then if you turn around and say to Lionel Messi, you're not the best player, then he's going to kick off. So it's not going to work in that sense, and in the style of football as well, which is obviously another factor. So yeah, he's an interesting one to have banded on. I think Valverde is a little more attuned to that style. I think he's an ex-player. I think he gets it a bit more, though.
In terms of the fact that these two names have even cropped out of the hat, though, I mean, where is this coming from? Is this coming from sources inside the club, these two names? And there will be, I'm sure, plenty others linked with a job like Barca's as the season continues, especially if Luis Enrique continues to stumble. But where is this coming from? Because as Ewan said, it's not really coming from Luis Enrique in terms of he's not said anything of whether he really wants to stay or go, or what his future beholds.
I think it's kind of logical as to where Barcelona pick their managers. Like for example, in the past, they've always gone to their sort of B team coaches, or Luis Enrique's assistant Unsui is getting mentioned as well. So they do like to pick from their own stock in that sense. And Valverde, as I said, is an ex-player. Sampaoli, a bit of a left field choice. But then these kind of things are sort of logical into how you can pick the next one.
What about this form in general of Barca? I mentioned that at the back end of 2016, you know, the form was excellent, particularly with the goal-scoring side of things. However, when you look at their La Liga form, rather than looking at it in all competitions, only 2 wins in 6. Of course, the draw against Villarreal on the weekend as well, a frustrating one saved by Lionel Messi, as it always seems to be with Barcelona, that when he gets a free kick in that sort of range, he's going to put it in the top corner, Ewan. But it's a side that are struggling in La Liga right now and are pushing themselves out of the title race at this point.
Yeah, I mean, if they didn't have Lionel Messi, then you really do have to wonder how far back they would be. And you saw, yeah, he scored that free kick against Villarreal. I don't think I've seen a free kick land in the top corner so sweetly. and it was a little bit different from in Bilbao, when his free kick sort of bounced around and just about snuck in. But again, a Messi free kick, keeping Barcelona in that tie. We'll see what happens later in the week. Without him, you really wonder how they would, how badly they would be doing, especially since some of the games that he's not been there have been the ones that they've struggled, and the Alaves loss, for example. I mean, there's been a few times when Luis Enrique has rested Messi and they've struggled with it. I actually thought they played quite well in the Villarreal game, especially in the first half. They've had worse performances, I think, this season where they've managed to win. But yeah, this one, Villarreal are a tough team. If you don't take your chances when you create a few of them, then you're going to get found out, and that's exactly what happened. So now you've got to think that they're a little bit out of the title race. I mean, Real Madrid do have some tough away fixtures in the second half of the season. They have to go to Villarreal as well. But yeah, Barcelona need to be winning these kind of games, and especially when Real Madrid looks so unstoppable.
What about the refereeing? Piqué twice now, both after Bilbao and after the Villarreal result, has been quite vocal about his frustration to do with refereeing decisions, feeling that in both games, and certainly in that Bilbao one, Barca denied clear-cut penalties that should have been given. And there is always this cry of the Madrid bias, if you will. Well, not always, but sometimes coming out from Barca about how there's a refereeing of a bias against them at times, and officials and La Liga want Real Madrid to do well and to be the biggest club in Spain. What do you make of it? I'm not asking you to even say that there's any sort of bias or say that there's cheating or anything like that, but do Barca have a right to feel hard done by about refereeing decisions that have gone against them, particularly in the last two games? Or is this just you've got to get on and play and not make it about refereeing decisions and play well enough that regardless of what decisions a referee gives, you still get the job done?
I was going to say, I don't really think it's so much about Barcelona getting the poor rub of the green. It's more the fact that their form is bad and they need sort of excuses as to find why that might be. And Spanish football, you kind of look around at the other leagues and think, are there any other leagues that have this kind of politics situation with the referees' decisions? And in Italy, it's always Juventus get the decisions. At Man United, when Ferguson was there in England, he always got the decisions. Not so much anymore. And Spanish football's so unique in having that. And as someone who, like, I watch a lot of Serie A and Premier League, I just find it quite astounding, really, that it's like Javier Tebas is the person that Gerard Piqué has a go at, like, individually, personally. That's the one who he has a go at about the refereeing decisions. And it's quite perplexing, really. I do think that if Barca had won their last six games, they wouldn't be doing it.
What about yourself, Ewan? You sound like you wanted to jump in on this too.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Piqué said himself that Barcelona, and this was part of his dig at the referees, was we need to now win games by so much that the refereeing decisions don't matter. But I just found it odd that he's sort of saying that as in that's like a new idea. I mean, you always want to try and, you know, win your games by so much that it doesn't come down to fine margins. And yeah, it's a good point that Mark makes when you're saying that there's no real comparison, I think, in other countries of this bickering, tallying up every single marginal offside goal. And if you were to do that for every single La Liga game, you'd probably see Real Madrid and Barcelona are quite even at the end of it all, and then there's a big massive gap between every other team in La Liga, so they can complain all they want about the other one getting slightly more or slightly better calls week to week, But Barcelona and Real Madrid should probably just be thankful that they're not, for example, a Granada or an Osasuna who are rarely going to get the so-called bias that Piqué seems to think there is.
I agree with that because the sense that if, like, Leganés or Deportivo La Coruña, if we went back and reviewed all of their decisions over the course of the season, they'd be miles behind. And no one talks about them. Obviously, it's a bit of an obvious thing to say, but it's true. And especially in La Liga, when Real and Barcelona against each other always say, oh, they've got two more, etc. But they are, as Ewan says, miles ahead of the rest.
I doubt it is going to come down to refereeing decisions this title race, but perhaps it could come down to Barca's fallibility over this winter period. Rumours as well of Rakitic perhaps being off to Manchester City. He's denied eventually, but again, it just seems like Barca's just falling apart at the seams at the moment, and they need something to really settle the house in order. Big game coming up, of course, in midweek against Bilbao in the second leg of that Copa del Rey round of 16 matchup that they trailed 2-1 in. A very feisty first leg as well, and really had a tough task, as I say, against Villarreal on the weekend. We're going to take a very quick break. Plenty more coming on the podcast when we return here on Eye on La Liga, including Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, a bit of Sevilla, and the battle at the bottom as well. Show plenty more on offer here on Marca's Eye on La Liga. Remember, you can tweet us at Marta Marca in English, not Marta. Marta sounds like a former Spanish girlfriend or something like that. At Marca in English, at Marca in English, all one word. To get in contact with us, leave us your questions, comments, and anything you want us to discuss on the show. Let's take a look back at the weekend's results, because it seemed almost, aside from the Barcelona game, that there was a little bit of order restored this weekend. When you think about the performance Atletico Madrid put in, when you think about the high quality of Real Madrid, and the fact that Sevilla were able to get past in a massive game against Real Sociedad and really establish themselves, taking outright control of second place in the La Liga table and putting themselves just under Real Madrid, although they do have that game in hand as well. Atletico Madrid, Diego Simeone's come out and said he's really relishing the challenges in front of him for 2017 in the second half of the season, which I imagine is what we would all just expect him to say. That's the kind of manager that he is. He likes the fight. He likes it when the back's against the wall, and he likes to come out all swinging. But he's also made a very interesting comment about how his team is very reliant, admitting his team is very reliant on Antoine Griezmann. Now, do you think that is a positive thing for Simeone to come out and say about his side? Because to almost admit the reliance on Griezmann shows some sort of weakness around that rest of that team, do you not feel? Or do you think this is him just trying to say, look, we do rely on Griezmann, and hey, we need him to go and be stellar again in this second half of the season, but that's what I'm looking forward to, that's one of the challenges I'm enjoying for this second half of the campaign. Just wondering how you take his comments.
I think when he made that comment, he also said that they're dependent as well on Gamero or Torres. I think he was more meaning whoever's up front, as in the rest of Atletico will keep, they'll build the foundation, they'll generally keep a clean sheet, and then it's up to the forward to make something happen. But looking at that whole idea of Griezmann dependencia, I mean, if I was a coach, I'd be quite happy to be reliant on Antoine Griezmann. He's, one of the best players in the world. He'd been going through a bit of a sticky spell, and his goal against Eibar was his first in, I think, 839 minutes. There's all sorts of numbers going about, depending on whether you counted stoppage time and all sorts. But I think that's a bit harsh to say you didn't score in two more minutes of stoppage time. But yeah, he scored his first La Liga goal. But then again, he scored four goals in the Champions League and in the Cup and during that run. So I think that was a bit harsh to say that he was on a terrible spell. But yeah, I mean, I think Atletico Madrid are sort of built that way. Everybody has a very fixed position in that team. And you see Simeone on the sideline shouting if anyone moves, 2 inches to the left of where they're supposed to be. But Griezmann has that sort of freedom, that creative license to do what he does best. So yeah, I think they do depend on Griezmann, and it worked for them last season. It hasn't worked all this time this year, but it could do with before we get to me.
With Atletico 9 points off Real Madrid in first place, of course, with that game in hand over the rest of La Liga. Sat in fourth place at the moment as well. They've just gone above Villarreal after this weekend. Do you think Simeone relishes this sort of situation more than perhaps at the beginning of the season when some people, Mark, tipped Atletico Madrid to be title winners from the very get-go? Do you think Atleti and Simeone both need that underdog factor, that come-from-behind factor, to really get the best out of them?
Yeah, I don't know who was predicting them to win the league. That sounds preposterous. It's an objective, isn't it? And the objective at the start of the season is always quite general because you've got a complete like clean slate. And Diego Simeone isn't really someone who operates off of a clean slate. He likes to know the context and how to work it out, etc. And that's why, as Ewan says, all of his players effectively have one job. And Griezmann's role in that is to get goals. That's his one job. A lot of the times this season we've seen players, even players like Jan Oblak, have abandoned their job. And he's got a back against the wall mentality, and that works for him when he's not doing well. When he's doing well, then there's a bit of momentum and what have you. But at the moment, he's got to find somewhere to get momentum from. And they've started 2017 really as well as I thought they could have done it. So it was a good ground-out result that they got at Eibar that, like Griezmann said, was typical Atleti.
Ewan, of course, you know plenty about Eibar. And you get the feeling that if Atleti had stumbled, even though with Eibar sat in 10th in the league table at the moment, and they've been very good this season, exceeding expectations of many, had they not got a result, many would have said, oh, you see, Atleti starting 2017 as they finished 2016, stumbling along, not quite the finished article. But with 3 points straight off the bat against a mid-table side, and quite a convincing win as well, against a solid team that's been building a grander reputation this season for itself, you do feel that it's suddenly, right, they've started on the front foot, they've got going straight away, and they've hit the ground running. It's a real kind of, this could have gone either way, in quite a stark contrast for Atleti, dependent on the result.
Yeah, it really could have, and it almost did as well. I mean, Eibar had a really good first half. Atletico didn't have any chances in that first half, and the ball fell to Sergio Henrique in the six-yard box, and he picked the worst moment to decide to forget how his legs worked, and the ball trickled out for a corner. But that could have been really worrying for Atletico. There were a couple of penalty shouts as well, and then the first goal was offside. But in the second half, they did look like that sort of normal Atletico Madrid, and they sort of, I think, proved a lot of people wrong, especially at half-time. A lot of people were already sort of writing the Atletico obituary for this season, but they turned it around a little bit in the second half, came away from Eibar, which isn't a good, easy place to go at the best of times, especially when a third of the pitch was literally frozen. And it was especially impressive, I think, because they'd been travelling so much. They travelled, I think it's 13,000 kilometres in the past 8 days to go to this, which is partly their own fault because they went to play this money-spinning friendly in Saudi Arabia. Then they had a cup game all the way in Las Palmas, and now they were up all the way to the opposite end of Spain to Eibar. So that was 13,000 kilometres in just 8 days, which I did a bit of geography homework, and that's more than a quarter of the circumference of the Earth. You can write that down. So that's, when Atletico have travelled a quarter of the Earth in 8 days and come away with a couple of really good wins, and, well, they won the friendly as well, which is great. It's been the perfect start to 2017. They've got Griezmann back among the goals, two clean sheets. A lot of people were wondering how they'd respond after the winter break, and, they've done really well, and they should go through in the cup. And, they're surely out of the title race now, but they could go and claim their third spot that at the start of the season you'd probably have expected them to get.
And to think we were all moaning off air about how far we had to spend time working and everything over Christmas holidays, and yet they're there travelling around the earth.
I know, except they're probably doing it in nice business class, first class situations, and they're racking up the air miles as well with that. I mean, think the first class lounges they're going to be sat in are probably going to be very nice indeed. I tell you what, I'd take those first class flights over driving my little car around the UK for all the games that we had to cover over Christmas, that's for sure. What about Sevilla then? Massive win. Huge win, I felt, on the weekend against Real Sociedad, just in terms of asserting themselves. This Sociedad side has caused plenty of problems for many in La Liga this year, particularly, of course, when they met Barcelona, the standout result for them, arguably, in the first half of the season. But Sevilla, I wouldn't say brushing past them with complete ease, but Ben Yedder with that stellar hat-trick, which, when you think he came in 7 million from Toulouse this season, and he's got 15 goals. He's certainly one of the steals of the season, I think, in La Liga. Sampaoli, as we mentioned earlier, linked with the Barca job. Interesting, his comments in the week about how he wasn't saying that he would turn that down or wasn't kind of committing the future completely to Sevilla earlier in the week. But he has come in and just made such a massive impact on this side. Of course, they suffered a big defeat against Real Madrid, where they were quite poor in the Copa del Rey in that first leg, particularly in the first half. Very slow to get going with a slight mishmash of players. Sampaoli, you feel, is really focusing on La Liga from how 2017 started with his team choices and team selections for these first two games. And not only that, he's now established himself in his side as out-and-out second place in the La Liga table at the moment. What a start to 2017 for them.
Yeah, I mean, it really was a big win. I mean, Real Sociedad and Sevilla were probably two of the most surprisingly impressive teams in the first half of the season. I think people expected Sevilla to challenge for the top four. No one really expected them to be this good, and Real Sociedad sort of came out of nowhere as well. So this was a really interesting one, and I don't think anyone expected it to go 4-0 to Sevilla. Wissam Ben Yedder, just hat-trick, 15 goals, like you mentioned. I will be the Scotsman in the room and put a bit of a downer on it and point out that I think five or six of those goals came in the cup against Formentera, but the ones he scored in the league, and he scored a couple in the Champions League as well, have been really vital. And yeah, he won this game for them with that high pressure. And yeah, Real Sociedad, I think, really missed David Zuratuza in this one. He got injured in the cup game. And him and Iyarramendi had just been superb in the first half of the season, just patrolling that middle of the park. And it just sort of shows you that even when one of them is missing, the whole kind of Real Sociedad machine falls apart a little bit. And you certainly don't want that to happen when you're playing Sevilla. So, yeah, a big setback for Real Sociedad. And it'll be interesting to see if they recover, if this is maybe a sort of indicator that the first half of the season was a bit of an overachievement.
They were full of errors as well, Real Sociedad, on the weekend. They were really made a bad mistake for one of the early goals, and then it was kind of similar to their 5-1 loss at Deportivo at the end of last year. They have it in them, which is going to be worrying if they're going to properly challenge for the European places. I can't imagine that they'll challenge for the Champions League now, given Sevilla and Atleti look good enough to be there with Villarreal for the top five. But it'll be a good battle between them, Athletic Club, and maybe Celta Vigo for the Europa League places, though.
Sao Paulo said that he was elated with the turnaround and the response from the loss to Real Madrid in the Copa del Rey. But he's the kind of manager that, if anybody's going to get that sort of response, it's probably he and Diego Simeone that will get that quick turnaround because of how impassioned they are as managers. Arguably the standout kind of performer on the touchline for the first half of the season, Sampaoli. I don't have the superlatives to say how much respect I have for what he's done with this Sevilla side. It's so attractive and so fast, the football that they're playing at times. Are they real contenders for the La Liga title? If Real Madrid slip, do you put them above Barca at the moment, as it stands in the La Liga table, as being the contender to take on Real Madrid for the title race?
I guess so. I mean, technically you have to, don't you? Because they're above Barcelona in the table. But Barcelona, that team where you give them a sniff and they've got that chance just to be ruthless. Well, Sevilla obviously lack the experience. But, I mean, they've been better than Barcelona in the first 17 games. That's just a fact as far as I'm concerned. They got one more point and they deserve it.
Wow. Barca then are certainly playing third fiddle in this title race, according to Mark. When we come back here after a quick break on the show, we're going to talk about Real Madrid because we haven't touched on the league leaders yet, and we probably should. The celebrations were there for Cristiano Ronaldo as he paraded his Ballon d'Or trophy around the Bernabeu this weekend, and they got a pretty impressive victory as well. 39 games unbeaten. More on that when we come back here. Today it's time to talk about the league leaders. Real Madrid, superb on the weekend. They've been superb to start the season as well. 5-0 against Granada. Very much expected them to be dominant, but a 3-0 victory as well in the Copa del Rey. James Rodriguez with two goals in that first leg encounter against Sevilla, albeit a weakened Sevilla side, but nevertheless, Real Madrid getting things done. And as some people have called it, looking like world champions that they are. To start 2017. 39 games now unbeaten in Spanish football. It matches Barcelona's record set last season. Why are we not talking about Real Madrid as one of the best sides that we've seen in Spanish football? Whenever Barca do something like this, we always laud and praise them and say, look at this Barca side, isn't it fantastic? They've changed the game of football. Zidane, in what, under 12 months, has done so much for this Real Madrid side in terms of bringing a Champions League. He's got them outright favourites by a long way now to lift the La Liga trophy. They're the world champions. They're looking unstoppable. They've got depth. They've got quality. Luka Modric is just phenomenal right now. Why are we not lauding this Real Madrid side a little bit more, gentlemen?
Personally, I think it's because some of their players are a little bit unfashionable. Some of the players aren't quite the Iniesta incredible pass for 40 yards with Messi running onto it. Part of the reason is because which players do you pick out? Do you pick out the ones that played against Sevilla, or do you pick out the ones that played against Granada? Because they were two different teams and they played the same game and had the same result. So in effect, I think that, I mean, it's all down to Zidane for me. In terms of whether he's done a Guardiola, in effect, I think he's kind of reinvented the wheel in a sense. He's just made his players play well. It sounds pretty simple, to be honest. But in doing that, he's produced a very successful team so far.
You're not writing a book on football management, are you, Mark, by any chance? Quite a short one.
Make players play well. Yeah, it's kind of, it's revolutionary, really, isn't it? It's up there with score goals.
Chapter one, play well. Chapter two, play better. Yeah, I like that. Very, very nicely done, Mark Mayo's guide to football management. So why are we not talking about Zidane then? Because, let's face it, this is his first ever job as a manager. I know he's been very closely linked to Real Madrid in terms of the coaching staff, and he was basically primed to take on this role eventually once he stepped into the club and stepped into the backroom kind of area at Real Madrid. But to have this amount of success, there aren't many that expected it to go this well. He was amazing on the pitch. Even better as a manager, it seems, though, you.
Yeah, I think his problem is that he arrived when they were in a bad state after the short-lived Rafa Benitez spell, but he did arrive, you know, just a year or so removed from winning the Champions League. So I think a lot of people assume that, you know, they were made to look bad by Benitez, but they were actually a winning team, which was in theory true. And he's arrived. Whereas when Guardiola arrived at Barcelona, they were a bit of a shambles the last couple of years at Rijkaard. He cleared out the best players in the squad, started afresh and really built his team. Whereas I think there is this idea that, you know, Zidane has inherited the BBC, which is true, and hasn't really had to change anything that much. But I think that's to do a disservice to what he's done. I mean, when they were under Ancelotti, you have to remember you can't really compare Zidane to this Ancelotti team, because he was part of that coaching staff as well. So you wonder, was that because Ancelotti made the 2014 Champions League winner so good, or was Zidane's influence maybe a lot greater than we assumed at the time? Having seen how well he's done as a coach, you have to think that he maybe played a bigger role in that coaching staff than we thought at the time. So yeah, I think Zidane deserves to be talked about. I think it's a good point that Mark makes about they have almost so many different teams that they can play. I think with the Barcelona greatest team ever kind of discussion, you could quite easily write down their starting 11 on a piece of paper, and I think that almost adds to the sort of glamour of the team, the sort of legend of them. Whereas with this Real Madrid team, you never know who's going to play week to week. They probably have maybe the greatest squad ever, but that's not maybe quite as much fun to talk about.
Yeah, having to reel off about 22 names rather than just a starting 11, maybe a little more difficult for the casual fan. But 39 games unbeaten, a phenomenal achievement for Real Madrid and Zinedine Zidane. And it's hard to see them not continuing that when they take on Sevilla, already with a 3-goal advantage in the Copa del Rey this week in the second leg of that encounter. What about then, talking of the Copa del Rey, James Rodriguez scored 2 against Sevilla in their first leg. The quotes that have come out from him saying that he's elated, he loves it in Madrid, he's so happy, he doesn't want to leave. You know, him and Zidane get on so well. This is a man who was primed, by the way, to be booted out of the door on January 1st almost immediately, or perhaps was going to be looking to at least leave as quickly as possible. But then I've seen contrasting reports from other news outlets saying that James has had another bust up and he wants to leave today and he wants out of Real Madrid as quickly as possible. Does he want to go? Does he want to stay? Does anybody have any idea what's going on at the moment with his future?
It's kind of hard to know what's going on in general with him, really, whether he's playing well, whether he's playing badly, whether he's happy or unhappy. I get the feeling at the moment that when he comes out with good, like I'm really happy, etc. kind of comments, that the Florentino Perez ventriloquism act has had another go. Because it doesn't make sense to me that he would come out after a Club World Cup final win and say, I want to leave, and then come out after beating Sevilla in the first leg of a Copa del Rey last 16 game and say that this is the best moment of my life. Those two things don't compute for me. So he won't go in January, but we'll see after that.
Look, you say that, you know, we all moan that the cup magic has been lost, but maybe, you know, domestic cup competitions mean more to James Rodriguez. You know, you don't know that, Mark. This could be like his equivalent of, you know, Torquay getting through the third round of the FA Cup kind of thing, beating Sevilla and scoring two. We can't judge the man too harshly on these sorts of things.
What about the
Ballon d'Or celebration for Cristiano Ronaldo? All a bit much, getting the former Ballon d'Or winners of Real Madrid out and about and paraded on the pitch. Of course, he had the Twitter controversy between Michael Owen and Ronaldo, with Michael Owen calling old Ronaldo, shall we say, a bit of a porky fella, so to speak, and face the music for that one. I think Michael Owen, compare those two in terms of what they did on and off the pitch, and I think most people would probably say that R9 Ronaldo had a bit more of an impact both at Real Madrid and in world football in general. But do you like this sort of thing, you know, Ronaldo parading this thing about at the Bernabeu, or is it all just a bit much now? He's won the award, let's move on, let's play football.
I think it's a bit much, but if you're Real Madrid and you're paying so much money for these Galacticos and they've gone on to win the Ballon d'Or, then you sort of have to show off a little bit. It's like, you know, putting out the good china when, you know, the Queen comes round. You know, you only win a Ballon d'Or every, with Messi around, you know, not even every 2 years you're guaranteed of one. So when Cristiano Ronaldo wins a Ballon d'Or, then, you know, why not get the stars out, make a day of it. You know, I quite enjoyed, the excuse to remind the world that Michael Owen won the Ballon d'Or, and just to see Twitter melt down at the thought of it. You know, I think if I was Florentino Perez, I'd try to do that more often. It obviously wasn't that much of a distraction to them, and, you know, it made a bit of an occasion of the game, probably sold a few more tickets, and, you know, why not?
All right, gentlemen, we've had a couple of questions come in over Facebook and Twitter. Of course, you can get in contact with us, Marker in English on Facebook and @Marker in English on Twitter. And to do with Real Madrid, Casemiro or Kovacic? Which of these two players in the heart of the Real Madrid midfield do you prefer to see? Casemiro, of course, really came to light at the back end of last season under Zidane. Kovacic, though, and we've mentioned this already, the depth that Real Madrid have, just showing that he's been excellent when he plays, and they don't miss a beat whenever he comes in and sits alongside the likes of Kroos and Luka Modric in the midfield. Gentlemen, who would you rather have in your starting Real Madrid 11, or does it really matter with these two?
I think I'd probably go with Casemiro. Does the job that that no one else in that squad can do. Kovacic is quite good in the sense that he'll get in amongst, and he's quite physical and he'll work hard. But in terms of like sheer defensive ability, I think you've got to have Casemiro in there.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Fair play. Casemiro, there it is, Ian Ray. The decision from the experts. I'm not going to put my name in the hat. You know me. These guys that do the righty-righty, I just do the talky-talky. But Ian, thanks very much for having a chat with us today via Facebook and getting in contact with us. Let's talk a little bit about the battle at the bottom as well of the La Liga table. It's a massive game this evening, which unfortunately we're not going to have time to discuss and really get out before the podcast goes out today. But Osasuna against Valencia. If Valencia lose, they're right in that kind of bottom four, and of course the bottom three going down, but level on points with Sporting Gijon. But really is, they're starting a gap to be made between Valencia and Leganes in 17th and 16th place, a 4-point gap between those two and the bottom four getting cut adrift. Valencia really could do with the 3 points tonight. Osasuna could do with it as well, because they don't look like they're going to be getting themselves out of the bottom three anytime soon with the performances they've put in this season. And an interesting word as well from Sporting Gijon manager Abelard Fernandez, starting to blame the injuries as well. 11 losses in 14 after the loss against Las Palmas on the weekend for his side, but blaming injuries to Moy Gomez and Nacho Cáceres as the things that ruined his side's game plan and gave them very little hope of getting a result on the weekend. In terms of the Fernandez comments, it's just a manager surely now who's starting to really see no light at the end of the tunnel with this Sporting Heon side, seeing them get adrift, as I mentioned. But to go out and start blaming the injuries, I mean, that's one thing that we rarely see managers do, actually. They generally say, oh, well, it's not the injuries. That's not an excuse. It's just a sign that perhaps he's starting to really lose control of this season now for Fernandez.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit desperate when you come out and start blaming the injuries. But I think in Sporting Heon's case, it's probably fair enough. They had, before the season started, one of the sort of weakest squads you'd say on paper. And they were really lucky to avoid relegation last year. It's not going well for them, but it's probably going about as well as you could have expected. They're levelling points with Valencia. They're still, in with a chance. And I think, looking at the start of the season, I had Sporting Gijón as my favourites to finish rock bottom, and they're ahead of Granada and Osasuna. So it's not going well, but it's going about as well as you could have expected. And, 11 losses in 14 games isn't great, but, they sort of just have to pick up the odd points when they can and really hope that they add together to have enough to stay up.
Mark, in terms of this Valencia game tonight against Osasuna, do they have much chance at all? It's a Valencia side that you never really know what's going to be produced, aside from it's probably going to be mediocre at best this season in particular. It's a massive game this evening.
Yeah, it's the absolute ideal time to take on Valencia. We've probably been saying that all season, actually. Every single game is the best time to take on Valencia because they're just on a downward spiral, in effect. And Voro González being their coach, I kind of think is the best thing that can happen to him, because he had a decent little spell as caretaker before, and all of the other times before that as well. So if they can do something in January, they'll be all right. But, I mean, in terms of this game, I think they might even settle for a point, because if they lose it, then it really is panic stations, even more so.
It will be very worrying indeed for Valencia fans if that gap does remain at 4 points from Leganés, although they do have two games in hand, over Leganés, and the rest of the league are only played 15 so far. Going into Monday night's encounter against Osasuna, we'll try and talk about that later on next week if it does end up being a massive result indeed for one of those sides. Talking of January then, gentlemen, I know you love writing about all the transfer rumours that will be flying around at the moment, particularly with James Rodriguez. Do you see much business being done in the winter transfer window this season? Very little has been done in the opening week or so of January. Hardly any arrivals really into La Liga, that's for sure. Anything major do you think is going to happen, or are we all just going to see it kind of run its course and fizzle out the winter transfer window?
Well, you say fizzle out. There's already been one major signing in the kind of lower reaches of the division. That's Leganés signing their new goalkeeper, Champagne. So that's one that's gone through. Anyone higher up than Leganés making a signing, I don't see it too much. Deportivo have to replace Ryan Barbel. They're looking like they're bringing in Diego Capel. Elsewhere, looking around the league, I don't think too much is going to happen.
What about departures? Steven Nzonzi has been discussed a lot after his performances with Sevilla this season. Ewan?
Yeah, you'd really have to wonder why he would want to leave it at this point in the season. I mean, money always talks at the end of it, so that's probably why he would if he does. But Sevilla are really on, doing something special. They're still fighting in the league. Yeah, they're probably going to go out the cup later this week, but they have a really good chance in the Champions League. I mean, Leicester City are certainly one of the more beatable group winners. They could be in the Champions League quarterfinals, and you have to wonder if he'd want to give that up to move to the Premier League, or to move to someone that he might not even start as often. So I could certainly see him moving in the summer. That's very much the Sevilla trampoline effect. But I think he'd like to hang around for a little bit longer and enjoy the second half of the season that his performances have partly set Sevilla up for.
Yeah, I see that as a summer move myself as well.
I hope, by the way, Mark, that you weren't being too tongue-in-cheek about Nero Champagne from joining from Olimpo. I've actually, dare I say it, covered a few of his games in the last few years when he's been in Argentinian football.
He did start on the weekend, to be fair, so he's gone straight into the team.
As you'd expect, he's a very experienced keeper. He's actually not bad at all, and shows a fair amount of composure between the posts, particularly a struggling Olimpo side that kind of a mid-table Argentinian team at best at points in the last few years when I've watched them. But yeah, it's certainly not one to kind of turn your nose up at, Mark.
Yeah, so you're preaching to the choir, mate. I know all of this.
Finally, gentlemen, of course, we saw the UEFA Euro 11 coming out, dominated by La Liga players, as always. But there's also the best coming out. And I'm sorry, but it just sounds like an award that's been named by a six-year-old. FIFA's The Best Award. Kind of its spin-off of the Ballon d'Or, if you will, as Cristiano Ronaldo, I imagine, set to lift this one on January 9th in a couple of days' time. Voted for by the fans as well as the players, whereas the Ballon d'Or is going to be mainly voted for by journalists these days. What's going to be more prestigious for these guys to win? Are we going to have a big uproar about the best as well as the Ballon d'Or every year? I mean, what's going to happen with this, gentleman? One thing's for sure, we're probably going to see Messi or Ronaldo lifting it.
Yeah, it looks like Ronaldo's going to win this one this year, so we might have to wait until 2018 before we have the big discussion of which one is the best. And, you know, you could see Messi win the Ballon d'Or next year, Ronaldo win the best, and then, all hell will break loose as the refereeing controversies get put aside and we work out which voting system is really the most important. So this year, I think Ronaldo's probably going to win this one as well, and then there can't really be no discussion. Well, there will be, but it puts it to bed a little bit. But it just seems a little bit odd how there's two the best awards, and even, like you say, Ollie, the naming of it is just, I don't even know how to say it. Is it like, do you have to put the in the best? Is it the best? Or,
but then it's just best. Confusing. You can't have a best award. I mean, A, it sounds like it's named after George Best, and B, it would just be called, it would be grammatically awful, surely. Oh, you've won best. I mean, that's taking it from a six-year-old level to about a three-year-old level at that point, if you call it that.
Well, we're going in that direction.
Well, you said it was hard, like the talky-talky versus the righty-righty. I think it's something we all agree on that's terrible for us, isn't it?
FIFA seems to be struggling with it as well at the moment with their naming of their awards. I mean, you can see the spin that both these two are going to put on it, can't you? If, say, you have Messi winning one and Ronaldo winning the other, one will say, if whoever wins, FIFA's the best of all. The ones that really care and spend the money. And the other one will say, well, this one is voted for by the experts. This one is the experts that know about it. The other one is just a popularity contract. And it's just unnecessary beyond belief. I mean, probably the starting 2017 with more of these sorts of rules. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for your time. You really appreciate you coming on the show, mate. Thanks as always.
Thanks for having me.
And Mark, dropping in like a late January transfer in the end of the window. Really appreciate you taking the time out to come in last minute today, mate.
No worries. Thanks, mate.
Thanks very much, guys. Remember to get on Twitter at Marker in English, at Marker in English on Facebook as well. Have a search for us, getontomarker.com/EN, for all of the breaking news and views from Spanish football, particularly during January with the transfer window now open. And we'll be back in about 7 days' time or so. From everybody here, have a great one, and we'll be back in a few days. Have a good one.